Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Whether you're getting your outside space ready or planning a productive year of food growing, April is the month to move your gardening up a gear. And as the days lengthen and the soil warms up, there's plenty to be sowing and planting. So I'm joined now by our resident gardeners, Mary Staunton and Dermot Gavin, for all their tips on April. Good morning to you both. Thank you for joining us.
Morning, Claire.
This is the year. This is the year of the garden, wouldn't you say? Mary, is it busier than ever out there?
It is. I was out there this morning trying to dig up some wild garlic. And as much as people say it's lovely in pestos and stuff like that, I don't really want it rampant in my place. But it's, yeah, things are starting to move really fast and you have to keep on it at the minute. So if you have stuff to sow, seeds to sow, if you have stuff to pot up, you need to be doing it now. Okay. Otherwise, it's going to be June so, and we'll be behind.
So if you're not busy right now, Dermot, you're in trouble, is that
it? Well, that's absolutely it, Claire, but you're absolutely right. It is the year of gardening. More people than ever before are getting out there. They had a taste of it last year, and now they want to see through all the growing seasons. So it means this year you really have to be prepared, because a few issues in terms of COVID and with Brexit, the supplies we're normally used to just aren't here, so plan ahead.
Okay, and look, people are looking beyond the planting now. They're actually trying to create, from the chats I've been having with friends, they're trying to create a room outside. Isn't that what people are at?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We've all, you know, we want that escape, whether it's from the kids, whether to broadcast a current affairs program at night, whatever you want to do, you do need, if you have space out there, having a little room in the garden, if it's only a shed that you've converted, whatever it is, to use. The beauty of it is, if you have a place that you work from or you play from in the garden, you get to see your garden every day. So you begin to notice nature, you know, on a minute-by-minute basis. And at this time of the year, everything is changing in front of your eyes. It's exhilarating.
Well, look, let's get to our listener questions, because as always, we've so many of them when we say that you're coming on. And the first one, Mari, is a texter who simply wants to know how to start growing strawberries. And the presenter would like to know that too.
Okay. The strawberries are very easy, to be honest with you. So if you have a little patch of soil in the garden, you make a little ridge, and I always make a little ridge because we have kind of a heavy soil here, so make a little mound and plant your strawberries. You need about four on the ridge, about a foot and a half apart, or 45 centimeters, and keep well watered. Now what's going to happen over the course of this summer is they're going to get pollinated, they're going to produce strawberries, and after that they are going to produce runners. And the little runners can be taken away from the mother plant in October and replanted, so to increase your stock. So that's the whole idea.
Okay. Can you recognise those pretty easily as runners?
Yeah. They come off the mother plant in a kind of, it's like a long stem, and then they'll try and root into the ground wherever they want. So your job is to cut them off away from the main plant and replant where you want them. And that kind of increases your stock. The strawberry plants have a four-year cycle. So after 4 years, the mother plant is then ready to be chucked, I'm afraid.
Good night to the mother, and you move on. Okay. And just when you're watering them, it's important, is it not, to water the soil, not the plant in this case?
Yeah, especially under the leaves, because you don't want to damage the fruit. And I always put barley straw underneath the leaves of the strawberries, so that the strawberries have something to cushion them from the soil, so they won't rot.
Mm-hmm. The problem with strawberries is that other things get to eat them before we do.
They do. Yeah.
That happens all the time. Dermot, this one is about a miniature Victoria plum tree. It's coming into its fourth year in the ground, but the plums have previously all been eaten by some kind of bug. There you go, and end up rotten. Now I have an abundance of buds on the tree indicating potential plums. How do I prevent the plums from going rotten?
Probably more one for Mari than me, but okay. Victoria plum is the only plum to grow. Absolutely brilliant, and good to be aware, if you've had that experience last year, good to be on the lookout for whatever could be attacking. What would you say it was, Mari? It's difficult, but we can't see the plant.
Yeah, it's a moth, basically. What's happening is the male is flying around looking for the female, and then she's obviously going to lay the egg. So your job is really to put in, it's called a pheromone trap. It's like a little, almost like a little tent, tiny little tent, and you put it in amongst your fruit trees, and it traps the male moth, so then he can't mate with the female, which kind of reduces the impact.
Because it's very hard for them to mate this year because Coppers is closed.
Oh, God. Oh, dear.
Coppers is closed. The tent is open.
Come on in. A bit of links.
The Star of Bethlehem, Diarmaid, will I give you this one about the low-growing patio border and it's self-seeding and it's taking over the raised plot, and this listener wants to know how they get rid of it or control it.
Control it really just by digging it out. It's one of these little campanulas, I presume, that a little alpine plant that will make its way anywhere in any crack or crevice in a patio or in walls or something like that. Some people like them. Some people think they're a bit of a nuisance. I like them. So getting rid of, you know, I think these days of using weed killers or any poisons or anything like that are gone. So getting out with your hoe, taking off the foliage. If you get rid of the foliage of pretty much any plant in the world, it can't photosynthesize, it can't produce energy, so it won't survive.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that, you know, as you say, there are differing opinions on it. I noticed that you posted on Instagram this morning a beautiful picture of hydrangeas, which I think are absolutely beautiful, but they're not everybody's cup of tea.
Well, hydrangeas are funny. So I took that picture in Liscannor and County Clare a couple of years ago, and it used to be the type of plant that was known as an old lady's plant, but like dahlias, coming back into fashion absolutely massively, and all the youngsters on Instagram can't get enough of hydrangeas. Very easy plant to grow. If you go down the borings in Cork or Kerry, you will see them growing kind of in ditches, sometimes in semi-shade. They like moisture. They like lots of moisture in the soil, so easy enough to look after. Mm-hmm. The obsession is trying to color, turn one color into another, so everybody wants blue hydrangeas,
blue.
But you can get anything you want. You can get some wonderful climbing hydrangeas too, and climbing hydrangeas for a north-facing wall.
And Mary, I have somebody here whose hydrangeas are damaged by frost, burned by the frost this week. Is there anything you can do about that, or is it game over?
Well, it depends on how far the frost has travelled down. Look, if it's a mophead hydrangea, the new kind of flower buds could be damaged. If it's Annabelle or, you know, Limelight or any of those, they'll put on more growth and they'll flower on that new growth. Mm-hmm. But the mophead ones are just a bit more susceptible to the frost. That's why really you leave the old feed heads on to the very last minute before the summer.
And the amount of people who are running out of their houses late in the evenings with some horticultural fleece to cover young emerging buds. You know, nature, it generally rights itself, but damage is been done, and that damage can be very bad with some plants that could stop, you know, something that's coming in, a fruit tree or something like that, producing fruit if the flowers are killed off too
before
early.
Before they're pollinated, yeah.
We've been having a lot of frost, haven't we, this month? A lot for April.
An awful lot. And we're seduced by the good weather, so everybody wants to get out early with their, you know, young tender plants. And you have to be careful.
Now, there's a hint of desperation off this text, which is why I'm going to go to it next. It's about ashweed. Who wants to take the ashweed question? Because this person wants to know, how on earth do I get rid of it? Please, and thank you with a number of E's.
What's ashweed?
Ashweed, that's...
Right, let's find out what that person means about ashweed.
It may be an ash tree that is seeding itself.
Okay.
No?
Okay.
Not sure. We might try and find out. I'm sure that person can text us back anyway and let us know what on earth do you mean about how on earth to get rid of your ashweed. Mm. I have thyme, says Libby, in a pot. It's 3 years old. It's looking half alive, half dead. Do I cut it back and divide or throw it away?
Well, can I come in on that one? Because we had a really interesting chat with a woman called Jekka McVicker a couple of weeks ago, and she's the queen of herbs. And what she's saying at the moment is that our weather patterns are changing. The type of rain we're getting is kind of subtropical, so it comes down in torrents, and plants like time are having a really hard time of it. So the most important thing is that you make sure you've excellent drainage. I would divide it up. I'd divide it up at this stage, but make sure it's not in a, you know, peat-based compost, anything that's retaining too much moisture. Grit around, grit in the pot, and excellent drainage. And of course, it wants to be out in an open, sunny position. Doesn't care about feed. It doesn't need that at all. A wonderful thing, if you can, is to grow a thyme lawn with lots of different, species instead of a normal grass lawn, because that's great for pollinators. But I would divide it, but just make sure where it's growing and what it's growing in is appropriate.
Now, Dan in Limerick, on the pollinators question, Mari, can you ask your garden experts if it's still okay to plant wildflowers, or is it too late?
No, it's still plenty of time.
Perfect
and
time.
The interesting thing about wildflowers is, if you have really rubbish soil, they do a lot better, because the grass can't, you know, if the grass isn't growing in that kind of rough area, it's not going to suppress the newly emerging lovely wildflowers. So if you have a grassed area, you're going to have to sort that out by skimming off the grass or sowing a plant called yellow rattle, and that will suppress the grass for you. And then you can sow your wildflower seeds, but also you can grow them on and put them in plugs. Mm-hmm. So grow them on and then dig a little hole and put them in.
Now, someone has texted,
or just let an area of your lawn grow and see what happens, because all sorts of unexpected stuff will come up.
Just
and
come up
again,
naturally.
Pollen. Mm.
A listener has been on to say ashweed is another name for ground elder.
Okay.
The joint groan there tells me this is a bad problem.
So, because I have it, so I know exactly what they're talking about now. It's ground elder, and it has crept in from, so I was blamed actually for bringing it into our garden. It takes over the place. The only thing you can do with it is basically tiller it, cut it off, dig it up. The more you dig, the more it breaks. So stop it photosynthesizing. Is the trick.
Okay.
So
I'm blamed for everything, and she's always right.
Yeah.
Now, you two have come up with a very clever idea to address the questions that we didn't get to on today's programme, Dermot.
That's right. So Mari and myself are going to be on doing a Clareburn Show Instagram special on both our accounts from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. tonight. So at Dermot Gavin or at Mari Staunton.
Okay, and you're going to be answering all the questions that we didn't get to today. Absolutely. Which is a great idea. Thank you both very much. We'll talk to you soon, Dermot and Mari.
Thank you
for your time. News just in, the Mayor of the City and County of Limerick, Councillor Michael Collins, has announced that the Chief Content Editor of Forbes magazine has committed to visiting the city when it's safe to travel. Now, Mayor Collins had written to the Forbes editor, this is Randall Lane, this week, to express his concern about that article that mentioned that Limerick had, it was published online by Forbes.com last Friday, you might have seen it. It had been, was removed shortly afterwards by the organisation, saying that it failed to meet its publication standards. And Mr Lane told the Mayor that he would commit to visiting Limerick personally and host a Forbes 30 under 30 gathering to encompass the young entrepreneurs of Limerick. And that article was about the Collison brothers, the brothers who founded Stripe, and it made some very unfortunate comments about Limerick. But you can see now that Limerick is going to benefit, because it's going to get a visit from the editor of Forbes and that event, hopefully, as well at some point in the future. Coming up after the break, we'll have the gathering.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.